Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about horizon objectives. This is sort of personal planning for big changes, if you can perceive them, think about them, resource them, sort of going for the big change, so you're not looking at the near field, the close combat situation. Now, I'm just going to give this podcast as I'm driving through Penrith, so it's Penrith is a big city, but it's sort of a country town by most international standards, a bit of a quiet place. However, I will have to pay some attention to it. So, look, the general theme is that you've got to have a certain sort of discipline to keep on going, a structure to keep on attacking when you haven't... Oh, far out, mate. You just scared the living shit out of me. Sorry, that was a person jumping out of a truck. As you do. If you've got a truck, you jump out of it. This is long-range objectives that you have in mind, in your view, that you work towards when the day-to-day shit seems overwhelming. The sort of horizon objectives. So these are the big things that you set yourself. You say, evaluate a objective, and it's a worthwhile thing to go for because it will really solve a whole heap of puzzles if you get going. And it's a worthwhile thing to say, I'm going there. It's sort of reminds me of sort of the US. It's a different thing. So I'm going to Tallahassee. This is an objective that no one wants to go to. I'm doing that. So what's that person doing? He's going for that long-term objective. So a list of long-term objectives for me was, people will have heard this, the Einstein to Haas pendulum, the Thompson effect, later at Lord Kelvin, a few things like that. organic new generation piece of laboratory equipment with multiple sensors, and it can sense how is it being used and adjust to it, and supposed to have a sort of a flock thing. These are a very big long-term objectives that no one is interested in. And of course, you don't want to have an objective that someone is particularly interested in, because you have to then join a society, negotiate with someone, frame how you're different from it. So it's much better just to pick through things and work out an overall objective to get to. And so this is a sort of a what I call horizon view, that you're looking at, you're struggling along, but what your vision is fixed on the horizon. So when there is a sort of a swamp and alligators and things in front of you, they're there. They're not the whole story. They're there, they're dangerous, you have to take effect for them, but you have to have this view. So if you can imagine, the majority of people I speak with have no horizon vision. They just have general principles of either not liking you or not liking themselves. There's something, their horizon vision is sort of like a blackness on the horizon, something they're not happy with, something that could change, that they could do. Now, of course, what sort of having stroke and the brain thing is, it's not that you wish for a change. Wake up, smell the roses you're hallucinating. You've had the change. Now what? It's sort of like people are wishing for that next step, and you've got that next step, and you've actually got to work out what to do and how to go. And so the actual methodology that people have, oh gosh, just looking, come on, it's got to find a park in here. So I'll be with you in a short while. No, it's insane around here. I'll be able to park up here. Okay, well, what's happening is I'm going to stop for a brief while, return some library books, then I'll be with you about the over the horizon, what is it? Over the horizon mentality view, and it may well be worth listening to the end of this podcast. Who knows? So I'm back from that errand, which has interrupted the podcast. That's just returning library books, getting new books on the moon, and we're talking about horizon vision, not being too fussed about what's happening in the near term. And I suppose I can give a few military analogies, and that's got to, obviously, if you've had some brain trauma, you don't have the sort of small arms combat readiness, but you still might have howitzers. So, I know a howitzer is a big gun which fires over 45 degrees. So the shell sails way up into the air and lands a kilometre or 2 kilometres away, if you're, or even more. So very large. And the idea is that you can place them in a valley out of the other person's direct fire. In fact, the only real way to hit a howitzer is with an airstrike or another howitzer, because you can actually place them down almost a mine shaft. They can fire up and do it. But the idea is that howitzers are aimed over the horizon at targets you can't see, and in general, your general thing is that you don't put a lot of small arms around them, and you don't sort of drag them through cities where people can see them and all that type of stuff. You just quietly put them in place to be there. So almost as this is probably their greatest time was, I suppose, Napoleonic Wars a bit, but during definitely World War One, howitzers fired up at high angles. And so it meant that you didn't have to engage in terrain, the management of terrain. You could place them really anywhere you wanted, and then they could fire at a high angle. They didn't have obstacles in front of them, and so therefore, sort of looking at the horizon targets, you look at that and you don't look at the yourself developing engagement policies. Now, sort of another military analogy is owning the rejection abandonment state. This is any thing where you say, oh, I'm going to marginalise this group, I'm going to put them downtrodden, I'm going to marginalise this particular person, not provide them any support whatsoever. And it's a bit like the rebels, the rebels out of Star Wars. Yes, they are hunted and stuff like that, but because they are hunted, they have a culture and a method of camaraderie and a method of operation, and it was pointed out that the actual rebels would have caused their action would have caused, even though the empire was corrupt, it would have caused the collapse of the empire economy and large amounts of starvation throughout the galaxy. But that being said, you can actually own abandonment. That is, all right, size up. Oh, yeah, well, this is what they're intending for abandonment. My view of abandonment is that that's just another terrain, similar to a desert. There's no vegetation, there's no life support there, but you can see a long distance, and there's aspects of abandonment that you can own. Now, unfortunately, you can't think of it on a short-term basis, in terms of if you're stranded in the desert, you've got to conserve energy, move at night, do all these sorts of things, and you've got to plan for a long distance to survive. It's a survival type of thing. Similarly, abandonment, you've got to own the space. Down the track, I think there might be a communal space of abandoned people, abandoned scientists unite. However, there's been other cases where people have been abandoned or left to their own resources, and have just had to just knuckle down and get things done. And one would be say Mawson. So there's a famous Australian scientist they're in Antarctica, their dog team, their major food supply dog team, went down a crevice, and they only had sort of lightweight patrol scout dog teams left to take them back, and eventually everyone died except this one man, Mawson, and he had this single-minded thing of, yeah, like, physically, you are abandoned. He goes, you know, you look around yourself, there is no resources, there's nothing, there's only ice, there's no point checking around there's the cops doing breath testing here. So there's no point checking around that ice crop or anything like that. You have to accept the fact that there's your abandonment, change your mentality. And he, of course, marched through, you know, hundreds of kilometers of Antarctica, unknown terrain, day after day, week after week, month after month, in incredibly harsh conditions. And he, although he was abandoned, he had that over the horizon mentality that there is a hope, there's a hut there. Now, for me, I don't think there is a hut there, but there is these over horizon things. So I'm just trying to look at the traffic here, over the horizon things that go. And so it's sort of accepting that you're abandoned and sort of you're left on the, you know, sort of like a piece of an old Terrace 80 computer, you know, it won't boot a load. And you watch the society and they throw so much good stuff that could be repaired out, which I suppose I think must be me. I think I'm a... Sorry, a computer. Put in a wheelie bin and sort of the little BIOS batteries sort of lit up. Sort of there's a little dim glow of a LED there. And I have to process my way through. Now on this computer analogy, people are just, it's just suddenly, it's a beautiful sunny day in Australia, and it's a great day to take risks on the road. But yeah, the idea in that, like, you're reformatting and you're evaluating the different apps that you're putting in, and some apps have got a lot of bloatware in it, take a lot of time, social time to maintain, and they're not all that effective. And there's some Trojan apps and a lot of things that people are led to do in society simply occupy resources, good productive resources, so that they can earn an income and live in a custom they're used to, or it serves no purpose but some insane game in their own mind, which they're seen as important. It's sort of a really incredible thing to see that when you and of course everyone is engaged. Oops, come on, you mate, you're just frightening the shit out of me, you poor man. Sorry, there's a cyclist. Oh fuck, oh shit, oh sorry, I shouldn't say that, but my god, he's cycling up the highway here. Just for the grace of god, I didn't hit him, but the person behind me just had to slow down like all crap to get going. That's sort of, again, I don't know, that sort of says to me, although it's not to do with the idea of abandonment as a desert, as a concept, as a place that you own. So rather than you being abandoned, you are standing next to the person who's abandoning you saying, I own that space. Thank you for abandoning me. That's my territory. That's me to go up. Now, just in terms of space, one of the things I'm really aware of, having been a kid on a bike, I used to cycle between Australian capital cities, and that's no mean feat. Now, back then, there wasn't all these two-lane or three-lane highways and all this stuff crap, but there is the highways now, but there is no connection that you can't really easily cycle between two cities in Australia, because everything's overpass, high speed, everything's moved ahead. And to a certain extent, I've just not been knocked out of my car, everyone else car, and I'm just rebuilding, and I've pulled a bike out of the shed to start going forward, and I don't have the option of going between these things. So I don't know how to actually market or own or I'm the abandonment zombie. Yeah, you've abandoned me, but I've come a zombie apocalypse of people who just won't die. You know, the surgeons are putting them back together. They're saying, well, it's sort of like there's a surgical team keeping the zombies up and running, and it's this, it's sort of like this idea that, oh, we've buried them, but they've come back. This zombie apocalypse. I think that's aspect, but also ownership of it. It's like, these are not the droids you're looking for. These are not the droids you're looking for. And that's Alex Guinness, how we could inject so much majesty and thought and presence into that. But that's what I have to do myself, is I'm very much and it's also a place into the technological legend of this abandoned person with bits of the starship, putting the bits of the starship together, sort of, doing a bit of repair with a screwdriver on this ultimately complex robot. No crows, wires, diagnostics. I just jab it as if it's a sort of a steam engine or something like that, and it comes back to life. I'm just trying to think of the let's go here. Thanks, mate. I'm just trying to think of the Star Wars thing and the actual general atmosphere of taking charge, that you're doing it. And it's a bit like, I don't know, in iRobot, where you have the robots which have ceased functioning properly, and they're all in, shipping containers, just doing repetitive actions, just trying to break out of their neurological hard wiring, which has gone a bit south. But that's the general thing. I'm the package deal is no. I'm not here. I've arrived. The situation is the situation, and your interpretation of the situation is as you would have it. And as you would have your interpretation, you own your interpretation. And you will live and die by your interpretation. So if you interpret that, this is the right thing to do, we've got to abandon people, we've got to move ahead and get that next product down, that's your interpretation. However, you're going to wear that interpretation. That's up to you. I'm not going to say anything against it. However, your interpretation is no longer the arbiter of possibility. I'm living in a new possibility regime where abandonment is similar to being the rebels. You've decided that you're not going to be women and children aren't going to be herded anymore. You're going to stick up and see what can be done. You're going to get two bits of stick and make a punji stake out of it, you know, for someone with a out of steel boot to step on. Okay, that's the end of that. I've successfully put returned from Penrith. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.